feature significantly in the book. We started it in the summer of 2006 as a platform for black, we call it the black bougie, black middle class people to talk politics. The blogging was really taking off and had taken off by that point. But among black people in the world of politics, there wasn't a big home. There were a few places and where black people did blog at the time, there was a lot about entertainment and hip hop. And there was a lot about being gay and black. Actually, I think when you find in blogging, people are able to build communities virtually that they may not have in their physical home. It made a lot of sense for homosexual and lesbian black people to find that common ground. So we started this in 06 as a way to just throw down and talk about what's going on politically in the country. What are these policies doing? What's the state of black leadership and the Congressional Black Caucus? And the name was a subtle nod to and mild jab at an organization that exists within upper middle class black America called Jack and Jill. And this has existed for a couple of generations. And the idea was for pretty well-to-do black people, you're often alone. You're one of the few black families in this neighborhood. You have one of the few black kids in this type of school. And so for the parents who want their kids to still experience a black community, but at a certain class level, they kind of create this forum and this organization. I was never a member of Jack and Jill. My co-founder was not a member of Jack and Jill, but it's a mild signal to those who know about it that, okay, we're kind of coming from this perspective while also messing with the idea of a class-based race organization. We have a gigantic watermelon as our logo, which is to signify intelligence. People who are really smart love watermelon, and that's the only possible thing that can mean anyone who thinks otherwise is a racist. So I think we're sending a bunch of different signals for people who have no idea. She's a woman, I'm a man, Jill and Jack, and it doesn't go any farther than that. But for certain types of black people, it's like, oh, so are you in Jack and Jill? You're kind of making fun of Jack and Jill. You're representing that. And it's yes to all the above.
So between Jack and Jill politics and your work at the Onion as director of digital, you must have to follow politics pretty closely.
I try not to lately because it's just so much. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been political my whole life. I grew up in D.C. with a mother that we're all getting to know a little bit through this conversation. So it's hard to put that down.
Any favorite headlines recently from The Onion?
Oh, man. Let me think. I mean, I'll go back to two old ones, and they're so different. One was, it kind of relates well to this book. I will mess up the headline, but it was essentially the idea of Obama as an elite is a great boon for African Americans. And it was an Onion News Network satirical video news report where they had this panel discussion, and they're saying for years, black people were seen as not good enough for white folks. And now they're saying this guy is too smart, too educated, eats arugula, too elite. That is an amazing step forward for black people to be seen as too good for white people. And I love that kind of satire came out of The Onion. Obviously, our election headline of black guy given nation's worst job is probably the most accurate news headline, real or satirical, ever printed, I'd say humbly. And this is actually pretty non sequitur, but we have a magazine cover, which is my own personal favorite. And it's in the style of like a Sunday magazine, New York Times. And it says, enough in large font. And then smaller beneath that, is it enough?
Your book, How to Be Black, is part satirical self-help book.
Yeah.
And one of the chapters is about how to take advantage of the booming black spokesperson market and provide a valuable service to the nation's clueless media outlets. What's the kind of spokespersons you're thinking of there?
So I'm thinking of, first of all, a spokesperson who fills a void. And I think actually the world is getting better at this. But for most of media history, there would be a pile of things happening called black things. And they would be associated with, okay, there's a drug problem, there's a crime thing, there's some sports thing, there's some R&B soul, hip-hop thing. We got to get, there's a riot somewhere. Quick, grab a black guy, throw him on air. And that was often some reverend-type figure, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson. And they would be looked to kind of fill that void and speak for all black people. And ever since King and X, people have in the mainstream have been like, well, who speaks for black people now? Farrakhan maybe had the last go around with the Million Man March, and people still try to ascribe all black thought occasionally to him. So this black spokesperson idea in the book is to kind of mock that desperation that, okay, we got to get somebody to explain all of blackness. I don't care who it is. I don't care what the qualifications are. Is it a dude in a suit who ran some kind of organization with the word national and organization in it? Put him on, mic him up, get some foundation makeup on him, and let's just have him talk. And it's almost always a him.
My impression now is that, in part ever since Obama was elected, that there's a much wider, like on the news channels, for instance, a much wider representation of African American, like pundits and experts and think tank people and bloggers and so on.
I actually agree with you, and I think that's part of the transition we're in, because we're entering a world where we need less to ask permission from sort of centralized authority, whether it's media authorities to get a certain image out, whether it's political authorities to promote a certain policy, whether it's religious authorities to express a certain type of spirituality. The range of black thought, and Jack and Jill Politics is a part of this booming tradition of black people just representing themselves. And when that happens, and when we're all given not just the right to demand change or the right to work from the inside to adjust the system or protest, but to actually build native systems, to build your own perspective and voice using these tools, a lot of them technologically based, you can't help but diversify the range of that conversation. I've been, you know, this chapter also kind of mocks myself a bit, because I've been that black pundit. And they go, oh, now we have Baratunde Thurston from Jack and Jill Politics to talk about something related to blackness. And I remember Rod Blagojevich, former governor of Illinois, said something dumb, which is should not be newsmaking at a certain point, because that's what he does. And he said, I'm blacker than Obama. And some cable news outlet, they said, we'd love you to come on and talk about Rob Blagojevich's comment that he's blacker than Obama. I was like, what? There's nothing to say. It's just let the dumbness stand on its own sometimes and just sit out there.
So you declined?
I declined, because the idea of Rob Blagojevich, who was an attention-seeking dude, saying something absurd, and a white guy saying he's blacker than a black guy, which has been done before, it's kind of hacked too, just wasn't that interesting.
So it strikes me that as an African-American memoirist and...
Ooh, I'm a memoirist.
and blogger and you know, pundit.
Yeah.
That you're in a kind of interesting spot in the sense, on the one hand, you're satirizing the whole idea of, like, spokespeople speaking about the black community.
Yeah.
And, you know, spokespeople being in a way confined to talking about the African-American issues of the day. But at the same time... you know, you start Jack and Jill Politics to specifically address what a certain socioeconomic bracket of African Americans are thinking.
Yeah.
And your book is called How to Be Black, and it's all about your experiences as a black boy, as a black man.
Yeah.
It's satirical, but it's there's a lot of real genuine emotion in it, in it too. I'm not sure exactly what the question is, but I think it has to do with being at that point in time where you can kind of stand back and satirize the whole idea of, like, the black spokespeople, but at the same time feel like, but that's still needed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That you still have to be there representing African-American points of view in what is still a kind of white dominant culture politically.
Yeah.
And socially.
Part of the mission of this book, besides being uproariously funny and occasionally tear-jerkingly emotional, is as I said in the intro, to recomplicate blackness and to just put out some other examples. Because we're at a time where the gap between who we really are and who the world expects us to be can be closed, because we can articulate who we are much more loudly than any of our ancestors. We can paint ourselves better. And so this book, what I hope, it's definitely steeped in blackness, because a part of me has been. But there's also so many quote-unquote non-black things. All the gardening stuff and the computer science-y stuff. You don't see those held up as shining examples of blackness. But I'm black and I do those things. And Elon James White, who I interviewed, he had a great line to kind of sum this up. He said, you know, you don't have to do any particular thing to be black, right? You do what you do, and you open up the doors to blackness. And that's kind of a fun way to think, not just about blackness, but about the self and about identity in general. And so this book could be how to be Jewish. It could be how to be a woman. It could be how to be gay. And I probably should buy all those domain names right now so I can cash in, cha-ching, and make money off my tweets. But I think that everyone has had some kind of experience of like, well, I'm not who people think I am or think I should be because their information about me is so off. We can kind of change that information.
Barry Tunde-Thurston, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure to talk with
you. Thank you. This has been a life goal. I'm checking this off the bucket list. Thank you so very much, Terry.
Thank you. Barry Tunde-Thurston is the author of the new book, How to Be Black. You can read an excerpt on our website, freshair.npr.org, where you can also download podcasts of our show. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Melody Kramer. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. We were all stunned today when we heard the news that Don Cornelius, the creator, producer, and host of the TV show Soul Train, was found shot dead this morning at his home in L.A. The show ran for 35 years. It was particularly influential in showcasing black music and dance in the 70s and 80s. We're closing with the Soul Train theme.